Hey, my people, this is Bobs and the Burbs, a podcast dedicated to shining a spotlight on Black-owned businesses thriving in suburban areas. We're here to amplify their stories and explore how they use the power of social media to make a lasting impact. I am Ashley L. James, the founder and social media consultant of ALJ Digital. Today, I will be chatting with Renee Goings and Dr. Ramon Goings of Dunn Dissertation. And they will tell us about taking business tasks from daunting to done. Hi, Ramon and Renee. Thank you for joining me today. How are you?
Hello, doing good. How about you?
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, I'm doing good. Okay, thank you. So we'll kick it off with your story. Can you tell us more about who you are and more about your business?
Yeah. You want to take it or I want to take it?
Sure, I guess I can start. So so Renee and I, just so you have the backstory before the business starts, we actually met in college, freshman year in college, been together ever since. Wow. We were paired together in a group because of our astrological sign, and actually come to find out we're in this group. We had the same birthday, same day, same year. And so we started there, we've been together ever since. And so, you know, when we started the business, I initially started, I'm a college professor, and I've been helping people, you know, with their writing, and even myself as a doctoral student. I went to Morgan State University for my doctorate, and I was struggling at first to trying to get through and understand how to finish the doctoral program. And I figured out a system that I taught myself on how to develop as a writer. And so by the time I finished, I was, you know, out writing to faculty, and they were like, oh, let me send my students to Ramon. He's figured something out. And I just started helping people. I was doing it for free for a long time. And so somebody was like, boy, you better start charging for that. You got your own work to do. And you're doing all this free work to help other people. Mm-hmm. And so I started charging for editing services. And then the editing turned into all these students asking questions. And it got to a point where I was like, look, I think there's something to this. I don't know exactly what it is, but there's something to what we got going on here. And I just started coaching people and charging for the services. And things just kind of spiraled from there. It got to a point, like, especially during COVID, what was just me by myself grew to a point where Renee had been helping all this time and we were building it. I'm like, at some point, you know, I can't do a job being a professor and do the business just by myself. And so this is when Renee and I started to make that decision to transition in. I don't know if Renee, you want to take it from here in terms of what you were seeing on the other side.
Yeah. So I really say things kind of like the light switch, like during COVID, we had just so many more people that were interested in our services and wanting to join, and it was getting to be a lot. And so at that time, I was working in corporate America, just kind of climbing the ladder, and I worked on the broker side. So what I basically did was either underwrite or negotiate health and welfare contracts for a book of business that I was assigned to. And in a nutshell, I did a lot of client management and basically talked with like a lot of business owners, a lot of CFOs about budgeting and managing costs around their benefits. And so I had done really, really well in my career. Actually had even gotten to the point where I had my own team. I was a vice president, but I was worn out. Yeah. I was worn out. I had been doing it for about 8 years, and I was ready for something new. And so we had gotten to the point within our business where, you know, I would do stuff in the evenings, you know, reconciling our books, because I've got to think for numbers. I'm a math major. I'm doing stuff on the weekends and helping. But, you know, I was really, really overworked and burned out with my corporate day-to-day job. And so we thought, you know, hey, if I left and came on full time, I'd have way more capacity. Because we're getting to the point where it's like, either I need to come on full time or we need to hire somebody if we want to continue growing. Me being the control freak that I am, I was like, yeah, no, I'm going to come on over. So after many, many, many conversations with our financial advisor and literally planning this transition for a good 6 months.
Yeah, it took a while.
Yeah. I'm not one, you know, you have some people that have a story where they're like, yeah, one day I was just like, I quit and I'll just figure it out. Yeah, that's not me. That's not me. And so after a lot of planning and thought put into it, I went ahead and I ripped the Band-Aid off and I came over full time February of 22. And so As a director of operations, what I was able to do is take a lot of stuff that was kind of on his plate to allow him to be able to focus on the delivery of the services and the coaching, et cetera. And I kind of took ownership of a lot of the other things that were happening within the business that were kind of just way too much for just one person.
Yeah, when she came on, we saw our company, in terms of revenue, doubled that year. Wow. She came on full time. So it was a direct line. We needed it. We had a chance to grow. But we need her.
In my mind, in full transparency, So my corporate job wanted me to stay, and they offered me a nice little bonus to stay. In my mind, the way I have to reconcile that is, I don't know if I'm an overachiever, but I'm like, I got to make that, like, to make this make sense. Like, I didn't miss out on an opportunity. And so luckily, because of all of the efforts and time that Ramon had really poured into the business at its inception, when I was able to come in, you know, just based on my personality and what I had been doing in my corporate job, and then going into like doing a lot of the sales, it was easy. Okay. It was easy. So.
Oh, that's fantastic. And I know that corporate to kind of buying this startup business is really a huge change. So can you talk more about what that was like for you, Renee?
Oh my gosh, it was a huge change. It's still one that I'm learning to even today, because, you know, I had learned that if you're not dead dog tired, beat down, working all hours of the night, having no boundaries, because basically I was in client management. So our sales team would get clients. It was my job to not only manage them and do everything for them to manage their health and welfare, but I had to keep clients happy. And so that meant, you know, creating relationships. And sometimes that meant, you know, really not having any boundaries, you know, being up at midnight, you know, sending an email, which really should be able to wait till the next day. But, you know, you got to do what you have to do. So coming into, you know, being in my own world where I can kind of control things, I'm immediately telling, you know, we got to do this, we got to do that. I'm not burned out. So that means I'm not working hard enough. I'm not grinding hard enough. And it is this like toxic mentality that I had that Ramon had to say, like, you are doing a lot. We've doubled revenue. What do you mean you're not doing enough? And I was like, wait, you mean I don't have to like work myself to the bone to be successful? It is like this mentality that I had to totally get out of. You know, outside of that too, you know, to having basically total autonomy over your schedule, you know, it's a little bit different for me. And so there was a transition there with that. Like, I got to be in my office at this time, at this, you know, it's like, no, like if I want to go out and run to the grocery store, I can go and I can do that and I can come back. So those were definitely some shifts. But I would say the main shift for me was coming into an arena, an area that I was not familiar with. So I am not a subject matter expert on writing a dissertation. You know, I only have my bachelor's degree. I'm not a doc student. I get a lot of clients that ask me all the time, oh, are you Dr. Goins as well? No, I am not. The only thing I know is from what I've seen him go through. And so not being a subject matter expert on something or going through it myself, I really kind of had to learn, you know, the key parts of it so that I could be able to really connect with prospects on sales calls and be able to talk about what they're going through and make our services meaningful to them, you know, to see if they wanted to join. So that was a big thing, a huge transition for me.
Yes, it does. Yeah, that sounds like it. It's kind of a lot to go through. It's interesting that mental change that has to happen in order for you to bring your own business or go on a distance with your partner. It's just, it's like, unless you have gone through it, it's hard to really describe it. But I love that you brought that up and brought that into the world. One thing, let me run back just a little bit, because Captain Bones, you did speak about you guys kind of meeting up because you had the same astrological sign, yeah. But I don't think you mentioned which one that is. So,
Aries.
What? So this is an Aries call today. We are all right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, what day? What's your birthday, though? What's the?
I'm April 15th.
Oh, okay. You know, it's not. Okay, it's not. March
28th. Yeah. Very cool. So, all right. So, moving back into the dissertation. So, can you talk about what that process is like with when someone joins your program for the first time. What do they go through?
Yeah, so when someone says they decide to join and they, you know, provide their payment, as soon as they do that, they get a welcome email from us that includes a number of items. We have an onboarding process, so they have to kind of go through that because there's some other additional information we need from them once they join the program. And then also as part of our program before, because our program is a group model, I do have a one-on-one consultation with each of those folks once they join to like just map out a plan for them during their time with us in the program. So they have an opportunity to schedule that as soon as they join. And then they have access to our curriculum. So it's not just coaching being like, you know, coaching calls, but we also have a curriculum that I developed that you know, has helped doctoral students get through the process. So our goal as a company is to take all the guesswork out of the process that holds a lot of students up so that they can focus on the writing. So we've done all that for them. So our goal is to help nurture and support them while they're with us so they can just focus on getting this project done.
Okay, very good. And now, Renee, can you kind of add in, how do you kind of get people through their process once they first join the dissertation and kind of what you add there?
Yeah, so I'm so glad you asked that question. And I'm just going to be honest and transparent. It's been, you know, a journey for me finding my place, like outside of when they say yes, you know, I want to join, and then really kind of turning the reins over to Dr. Goings. And so basically what I do is, because I had nurtured this relationship with them, I mean, I have some clients that are so frustrated with what has been happening. You know, they're sharing very personal stories and things with me on the sales call, and I'm following up with them until they've made their decision as to whether they want to join or not. And so it's kind of hard for me to just be like, okay, bye. So what I do, kind of calling on my experience being in client management, is keeping up with them. And so I have monthly one-on-one checkpoints with our clients to make sure that they're finding the resources in the program to be helpful to them. Sometimes I find that clients, while we give them this whole toolkit of things to use, they don't quite understand how to strategically use them. And so I basically help them and be a thought partner in that process. And so when I have these monthly check-ins with them, it's like, okay, hey, you know, I'm attending all of our weekly coaching calls, so I'm also hearing what they're working on, what milestones they're hitting, etc. But I'm also like, okay, hey, what's the next thing you're working on? And maybe they might be like, oh, you know, I don't know how to do this, that. And I'm like, okay, I want you to go to this module within the curriculum. I want you to do this. I want you then bring your questions to office hours calls. I'll help you learn how to pre-submit the question. You know, just kind of helping them, holding their hand while they're going through, which is basically a lot of the stuff that I did in my previous job, just a totally different topic. Right. So that's kind of how I remain involved.
I didn't mean to speak over you, but I was saying it's probably a different vibe as well.
Yes, very different. Very different. Assess, very, very applicable. You know, they need that person. I don't want to call it hand holding, but they need to know that outside of the coaching calls and the other different things that they're able to utilize, that they're able to have that one-on-one touch point. Right. And so it's very helpful for our clients, just knowing that they have that level of support.
Absolutely. Like that go-to person if they have any questions. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's perfect. Okay, so let us talk about this suburb of choice. So where are you operating out of? And yes, tell us more about that.
So we're in what we call the DMV. We're in Laurel, Maryland. So we're literally smack dab in the middle. 20 minutes north, you're in Baltimore. 20 minutes south, you're in DC. So a very thriving area. A lot of folks, Black and Brown folks, that are doing very well in this area. And we initially, actually after college, had moved up to where Ramona's from, which is Connecticut. And first started out in the job market when the recession hit. It was rough. And so, yeah, it was really bad. And so we eventually thought, you know, New England area is real tough to live, though. The winters are harsh. It's very expensive to live up there. And most folks would argue as if it's expensive to live in the DMV area, and it is. But it's something totally different up there in the New England area. And so we decided to come back down to actually where I'm from, which is the DC, Maryland, Virginia area. We've been here ever since.
Awesome. Okay. Love that. And now we talked a little bit about some of the challenges that you've faced, that both of you have faced in building the dissertation. Can you speak a little bit more about what went into creating the business and just how you've managed it thus far? Like, what are the challenges that you've run into?
Yeah, I think at each development stage, we have different challenges. So when I was first just me starting it out, it was figuring out what is it that I actually want to do and who do I want to do it for? And so like finding who my ideal avatar would be for the business and how do I want to deliver it? So before COVID days, I was actually traveling. I would meet with clients around Maryland. I would drive to them wherever they were and we would have coaching sessions in person because I somehow had that mindset about, you know, my background was being a teacher, K-12 teacher. I thought, oh, you need to be in class with somebody in order for them to get a result. And so I'd be traveling around. And then I recognized that that phase in the business, me traveling around was fine, but there would be days that I would start traveling to a client and they would cancel the session. And so now, in a way, I didn't have my business model set up right where I was still getting paid regardless. So there was things at that phase I had to figure out, like pricing, how to deal with people who are canceling, like figuring that part out. And then I started to learn, I started being a different business coaching programs that, oh, maybe one of the ways to funnel people out is by your price. And so you'll get a certain type of client who wants to, you know, do a certain type of level of work if they have invested a certain level amount of money. And so having that helped me figure out, oh, if I want to go one-on-one, if I want a certain type of client, I need to charge more. And then I started to charge more. And it's like every time I kept charging and going up on the price, I still would get clients to come through. And it got to a point, you know, when COVID hit and we went virtual, that really changed things. It got to a point where I just literally could not take on any more one-on-one clients because I was burnt out. I was like, there's no way I can do any more of this. And so I had to figure out, how do I change what we were doing as one-on-one, meet with people, to a group model where we can bring on other coaches and really have more of a scalable system. And so that's what we did like in 2020, 2021 is I converted from one-on-one to a group model. And that really allowed us to take on more people. We brought on a coach, like it really, you know, helped us to grow. And at that point it becomes, how can you sell a group program? So again, the problem shifted for us because people like one-on-one for some, you know, that was their thing. They want one-on-one. So it's just, I came on that objection about one-on-one. And then from there, just figuring out and refining who's our ideal client, where do we find them? Because again, I wasn't trying to be on social media at first, but then I learned pretty quickly, like, if I want to stay in business and try to grow this thing, I got to be on social media somewhere. And so that became another challenge, like how, as someone who doesn't like to be on video and do all that stuff, how do you overcome that and get on video? And that's just interesting. I get paid like talk around everywhere. I'm on video all the time. So it's just ironic what happens now.
So basically you kind of overcome that because that really opened up a whole new arena. For you.
Correct. That was my own unique challenge. Just for me personally, that was a personal challenge for sure.
No, but it makes sense. I think a lot of people are kind of nervous to get on video. I'm nervous to get on video. It's just like the mistakes feel magnified, at least for me. And so I'm always super nervous whenever I'm doing something like this. But so I can understand where that fear would come from, or just hesitancy, you know.
Yeah.
And then, is there anything that you want to add, Renee, about challenges for done dissertation?
Yeah, I think it kind of goes back to what we have been discussing. I would say, when I think about my experience, one of the biggest challenges for me was really kind of just the transition from working for someone else, being a W-2 employee, to coming over and doing kind of something similar, but in a very different way. And then also too, learning a whole nother area or arena. Cause again, like I'm not a doc student. I've never written a dissertation, don't plan on it. And so there was definitely a learning curve. You know, I'm a black and white person. I feel like in some instances I'm an overachiever. So I want to know everything. And I know that's impossible. I want to know it all. And so I even just think about, Ramon, you remember, like, we have breakfast meetings. I have my notebook. Okay, what does it mean when they say this word? What does that relate to? Like, what does the process look like from start to finish? Like, me basically learning, I'm reading the materials that our clients do. I'm looking at the modules because I'm trying to learn this so I can connect with clients and speak that talk when I'm speaking to them during consultations. And even now, I mean, there's still a learning curve. There's always going to be something to learn because everybody's process is so different. You know, you get some folks that are writing a 3-article dissertation versus a traditional dissertation, or you have some schools that, you know, they don't do proposal defenses. Some do. There's all these different nuances that you're constantly learning about. And so the learning never stops. But that initial learning of what the sphere looks like, it was a big transition for me. So I would say that that has been a big difficulty for me.
Okay. And then we were talking before about video being one of the primary ways that you reach out to either potential clients or people that you're working with now. Yeah. Can you speak more about the social media channels that you're using and how you're using video to reach people?
Yeah, so we're just about everywhere. So all on social media, I would say our main channels now have turned over, and this has shifted. So when we were first starting out, like 2018, 2019, even to 2020, Facebook was more so the place where we got a lot of leads in Facebook and Twitter. But now it's shifted, whereas like LinkedIn and YouTube has been our main acquisition channel social media wise. So that's been interesting to see the shift. So like even as in business, you have to think about the shift and then making your content applicable to that platform too. So each platform has their own way they may like, you know, content to be delivered. And so that's been something we've had support. Shout out to Carrie Henderson, who's our director of marketing, helped us kind of figure out and learn over this last, you know, this 3-4 years now going on. And so helping us figure that part out. And then in terms of video content, you know, there was a shift in this time too from more of like long form stuff to the short form. Like we kind of saw that shift as well. So being mindful of like making our content shorter. But then we still found that we have a long form, like I do a weekly show. We started in 2020 when I was promoting a book that I wrote called 14 Secrets to a Done Dissertation. And this just started out just to promote the book. And then we realized how well it was doing to get clients. And I was like, well, what happens if I just do this consistently each week? And so now it's 4 years of doing just about every week we have a long form video come out, and then we just, you know, repurpose that content to short form for the platform. So we've gotten smarter along the way, but it just first started out just sitting down in front of a camera and just cranking out live videos. I used to do them live too. So that was just always the, you know, each week, Tuesdays at 8 p.m., I'd be in this office recording each week. And like, got smarter now. Now you can schedule stuff. Now you can make it look live. It's a lot more things you can do with the tech, which has been helpful for us. But at first, it was just all live for about 2 years.
I know, okay. But everybody was focused on live anyway, as far as like social media channels. So I know that that really helped. You can grow your audience as well. So
yeah, and one thing I'll add too for people, like if you look at our social media numbers in terms of number of followers, it's pretty small. But I would just tell folks, if you have the right followers, then you can make a lot of money. I think some people get caught up like the vanity metric. Like, oh, I need thousands. No, if you have like a couple hundred of like just solid folks with you, what you have, you can stay in this for a long time. So I think that's something people have to consider too.
That's true. So it's really about the quality of the quantity, to use these phrase. But seriously, if you have 100 people and those 100 people really go for you, you don't really need thousands. Those 100 people are, you know, they're going to do everything you need them to do. So, okay, cool. So, video is where you kind of focus on, and YouTube has been a really big platform for you. So, with that being said, are there any tools that you like to use in order to keep up your video content?
Yeah, so a couple of things I think about the video side. So I actually use Restream to like record all the long form videos. I like that because then you can schedule that content, whatever you record, to go out to all the platforms at once. And so it's nice. So I'll do a bulk. I'll do one session. It takes me about 2.5 hours, but I record all the long form videos for the month. And actually, this is when Renee comes in because she helps write the script for the videos, and I just, you know, deliver them. So when she talks about her knowledge, she now can talk all the talk that we do when we're talking about dissertations. So she'll write it. I just deliver it. and then we just use Restream to schedule it out. So that's one of the main big pieces for long form. We use Canva a lot to do all the, you know, thumbnails, flyers, you know, all that stuff that we need. And then the other one is we're really big on is called Superphone. Because one thing about content, right, the purpose of the social media is to get these people off of social media to be able to market to them where you have control over the interaction. So we use Superphone, which is an SMS marketing tool. So we can send text messages to our audience. And so we have, you know, upwards of like 1,000 folks on our text message list that are doxing to want what we have. Like, so we have a direct access in line to folks. And so it's just amazing to have that one-on-one connection with people in our network. And so I'd say those are like the biggest tools that we're using. I don't know, Renee, am I forgetting something? I'm trying to think if there's anything else.
No, I think that's about it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
In terms of like the videos and using like AI to cut the videos, I know that you guys use Opus Clips or whatever, because our content bank is huge. I mean, like he was saying, we've been doing these, you know, episodes for the show for now going on 3-4 years. And so, we're very intentional. Shout out to Carrie. We're very intentional on understanding, the different psyche of our clients and where they are depending on what time of the year, quarter, season, et cetera. And so we're speaking to that. We're doing that in a way because of, you know, I'm speaking with prospects and potential clients. So I'm hearing what they have to say. We're writing the scripts. He's delivering it via the show. And then we're able to cut all that stuff up and utilize it and repurpose for whatever platform it makes the most sense for. So we have so much content. And so, you know, cutting up all the videos and being able to use it in different ways has been like really, really helpful too.
Okay. Yes, I love Opus Clips. So, also Canva has like their own version of shortening the clips as well, or you know, creating new clips, the magic clips that they've done.
Oh, I have to look at that. I haven't tried that. I've seen it, but I just never clicked on it to see what it does. Okay, I'll try it out.
Okay, so the next thing I want to ask you guys is, what piece of wisdom would you want to give the next generation of Black entrepreneurs?
I guess I'll start. The piece of information I think about a person that may be looking at this and they have an idea, they have a product that they want to sell, and they're just trying to figure out what that next step is going to look like, and it feels very daunting. The biggest piece that I want to give is to just take action. Imperfect action, action is better than no action. And so I know that, you know, a lot of times it's easy to get caught up in doing the things that are comfortable at times, you know, but just start taking action, start getting out and doing and taking action and doing the things that are going to directly lead to sales. Because once you have a revenue stream coming in, not only does it bolster, you know, your confidence, it's proving your concept and what you're selling and what you're doing. It's bringing in revenue for you to reinvest back in your business and be able to do bigger and better things. But it really just kind of keeps you going. You don't really have a business if you're not earning any revenue. And so that's my biggest thing. Just take action. Take action that's going to lead to sales. Everything else, I know it's a lot. It can be daunting. Everything else will fall in line. You'll either figure out how to automate it using like a, you know, Canva or something like that, or you'll get it done. But really just kind of focus on getting that client, getting those clients and selling what you're selling and bring revenue in.
Okay. And you talk about focusing on the biggest things that you have to do first. Take action on what's most important. How do you decide, you know, which thing on the to-do list holds the most weight?
That's such a good question. So with any person that's first starting their business, and we've talked about this on our podcast before, really what I would start off with is if you have a budget or projections. I mean, most folks that go into business, they're looking to, you know, earn a certain level of revenue or reach a certain amount of customers or sell a certain amount of units by way of whatever that product line is or whatever. So whatever you're looking to, you know, sell or whatever metrics you're looking to hit, look at what that is and look at what are the things that are going to lead that number to go up. So for us, just to give an example, it may be, looking at my Facebook group list, seeing who are the people that make sense for me to talk to and sending them a message or DMing them or calling them. So those kind of things is more so like what I'm talking about. But it may look a little bit different for everyone just based off of, what you're selling, what you're looking to pursue. So an example of something that maybe you could be caught in the weeds is, oh, I need my website to look this way, when I first start. That does not lead to direct sales. So while it's important to have a branded, website that is reflective of you and what you're selling, it'll get greater later. Get something out there to be able to do and operate your business, but it doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be glossy. That's not going to lead to direct sales. Connecting with your target audience, getting people on the phone or communicating with them, sowing those seeds that will, lead to revenue, that's kind of what I'm talking about.
Right. I like that. That was a sound bite. It could get greater later. That's right.
Right. I gotta shout out my mother-in-law because she says that a lot. I stole that. She always says it'll get greater later, and it does.
That's right. And how about you, Dr. Will?
Yeah, so I would say one thing folks to consider is like not being afraid to charge more for your services or product because for me, I grew up pretty poor. So like when you think about cost for things, cost is relative to your own experience and relationship with money. And so sometimes as business owners, we may go into this thinking everybody only sees money how I see it.
Right.
And I want to charge low because I want to get the most clients. That's the mentality sometimes we have. And that doesn't work. The same people who will like pay for something for 25 probably will pay for it for 2,500 if you position it right. And just to give an example, like one time when I was doing one-on-one coaching, someone had reached out to us and the most they could buy from us at the time, I think it was like $800. That was the most they could have spent. That person said no back then, but the problem got bad for them 2 years later. They came back to us and now the cost was 5,000 and they paid 5,000. So like that kind of shift, like really kind of like helped me understand, even for myself, I was like, oh, people will pay if it's the problem's important enough. And so like I'm like, as a business owner, we got to charge for whatever it is that that transformation we're having. And then also I think part of it, what Renee was getting at, like taking the action, is like sometimes create the product and or sell the product before it's created. Like we did that with our program when we were going from one-on-one to group. I actually pre-sold it and gave myself enough time to build everything out because it's like there's no need for me to go ahead and start working on something if no one's gonna buy it. And so sometimes we can get caught up. It's like, go get a sale first and then build it out on the back end. I promise you'll be the best thing you could do. That way you don't waste any money or time trying to sell something people don't want. And so that'll be a couple
Because
of things I would say.
when I'm telling you, part of our program, we have an extensive curriculum. One of the things we realize is that a lot of our clients, although they've been through coursework, they're still like trying to figure out how to take the coursework and connect it to actually completing the dissertation. And so Ramon built out this 9-module over 30 video lessons, literally of him recording all these different lessons. I mean, it was a huge, huge undertaking. It took a lot of time. It took a lot of resources. And so, to his point, building that out on the front end and waiting months
Yes, no.
to start making a sale, that was not befitting to the company. It's like, I know I can do that. Let me go ahead and start pre-selling and seeing, is this even worth me doing? Because I'm going to put all this time and effort into something, and then it might not even be, what the people want. And so just going ahead and that imperfect action, and it'll all come together, but going ahead and just getting out there and getting it done. So I just wanted to say that because with all those days, you going down there and recording that curriculum, I mean, it was months.
I developed it over months and then the record once we got the first sale, I was like, I gotta record this stuff. And so taking the outlines and like putting the PowerPoints together and then recording, re-recording, editing, yeah, it was weeks of time just on that, the creation part of it.
Well, I think that both those points of advice were really great. I mean, definitely as you're building out your business for the first time and kind of jumping into everything. So thank you both. So let's slide over into a little bit more fun stuff. So what are you reading, watching, or listening to that's really got you going lately?
So, in terms of reading, I am currently reading Atomic Habits. I am trying to really strengthen my muscle as it relates to discipline. Discipline in doing things and being consistent and sticking with them. And so I heard so many great reviews about Atomic Habits and just building habits that really can kind of set you up for success, not only business-wise, but personal. So I've been reading that, and it talks a lot about instead of taking this huge project and trying to attack it in one fell swoop, just getting 1% better every single day, just trying to get better every single day. And it's kind of something that we teach our clients all the time. Just getting the writing done, putting in the time. It doesn't have to be a lot. And then you go back and you look back 3 months and it's like, wow, I already have a full proposal done. So I've been reading Atomic Habits. I also have been reading, it's kind of been hard for me to get into, but Spare, where it talks about, Prince Harry and his time with the royal family, just something, an autobiography. I typically read fiction, but just trying to get into another arena of reading. So I've been reading that. And then outside of that, when I really just not want to disconnect and just kind of like look at a screen, anything that is a crime documentary is like right up my alley. I've probably seen just about all of them on Netflix. All of them on like the ID channel, all those kinds of things. That's really my wheelhouse.
Do you have a favorite?
So I actually binge. So when I sit here and I'm working, I need something that's on that I don't have to necessarily pay attention to, but I'm like hearing what's happening. So I just finished like binging a show called Cold Case. And basically, it's like a lot of like old cases that go cold, and then they basically reopen the case and they solve the case. And it's all kinds of cases all across the US. A lot of them from like the 60s and 70s have gone cold for like 20 and 30 years. And now a lot of them are using like ancestry DNA to use familial matches to find who these killers are because that didn't exist back then. So it's like, oh, we got this DNA sample. It's not coming up in like CODIS. So let's match it against a familial match. Oh, we have a third cousin. And then they do genealogy tracing to figure out who the murderer was. It's fascinating to me.
That is fascinating because I haven't watched like crime shows in a while. I've been on there going that deep now. They're like, okay, brother, but let's see if we can ID the sister and see if there's a
A little
connection
itchy.
there. That was wild. Okay, so how about you, Dr. Ron?
So in terms of books right now, reading was it $100 Million Leads by Alex Hormozi. I like the book because it's part of our next phase of our business is like generating more leads. We have a model that works. I used this first book to help develop and make sure it was anything that we could add to our program. $100 million offer. So I said, that worked. Let me try the leads. And so we've just been retooling what we're doing on our lead generation side for the business. Outside of that, I haven't really read a lot lately because I have to read a whole bunch for work. Like I do research. And so that's all day, every day I have to do that. So I do a lot just for my own research stuff. And then shows wise, like anything like drug kingpin related, I'm into. So right now I just finished Raising Kanan on Stars. Actually, I'm watching BMF, the third season. My favorite probably The Wire. Like I love that. I love that show. Just any show like related to like drugs. It's just interesting because of how that operation works. I think there's a lot of insights for business owners that you could take from it. Just don't sell that product. But there's some things about how they operate that I like in terms of what they do.
Yeah, I'm loving that spin because there definitely is a lot that can be applied to business. Hopefully, you're not using it for
Yeah, for
that
sure.
kind of business, but so I love that. Okay, last thing here. I really like adding to my playlist, and so this is the ALJ Work It Out playlist. So, are there any songs that you guys kind of jam out to that you would love to add to our playlist?
Yeah, tricky what I'm listening to
I
now.
think it's not a particular song,
Title, huh?
but for me, anything that's like trap music, like anything Migos, I'm like here for, like the old stuff, like when I need to feel like I need to get in the zone or whatever. Anything Migos, I'm really big into. If I'm just looking for something like chill, what I typically go to is like a SZA or Summer Walker playlist. I typically will play something like that when I'm here at my desk, like working or I'm writing copy for our weekly show. All in all, if I want to feel good, I want to feel something upbeat, I really like Chris Brown, old stuff, new stuff, it doesn't matter. So I don't have a particular song or a particular album, but that's just what I kind of lean to.
Okay.
Let me see. I was looking at my title to see what I've been like listening to. I said one song I like that just kind of, if I was trying to get like to do a workout, I would play I Might Forgive by Jeezy. That's kind of my, that's my joint right there. So I would definitely do that. First Person Shooter with Drake and J. Cole. I like those two right now in terms of things that I like to listen to in the car if I was just trying to jam out. So I like those. But when I work, actually, I play music that does not have words. So like I feel like smooth jazz. Like I can't have anything like getting into my head while I'm trying to create. And so I listen to just random, just there's an album called Hidden Beach Volume Recordings I listen to. It's just all like hip hop songs, but just smooth jazz versions of them. So they may play like they may play like the chorus. It might be someone singing the chorus, and then like the verse is just all just instrumental music. And this other artist called Varela is his name. So I listen to him too on Spotify.
Okay, very cool. I didn't know that they had that. So I have a playlist that's similar, but it's not well-known songs. It's just
It's like hip hop kind of beats
Yeah,
type
these are all
thing.
the songs that like, yeah, Biggie song, like anything like hip hop related, like they have, you can just listen to the instrumental versions, but like that's jazz version of it.
I like that. Okay, that's cool. All right, nice. Okay, so the last piece is, where can people find the dissertation online, and you as an individual online as well?
Yeah, so Done Dissertation stuff, you can find us anywhere. If you just Google Done Dissertation, we're on all the platforms, either at Done Dissertation or at Done Disc Coach, DoneDissCoach. If there's someone watching that's a doctoral student, and you need support and insights to get through the process, what you can do is actually text, and you can text hashtag elevate, hashtag ELVATE to 301-701-2466, and you can access, we have a training on how to elevate your academic writing. So if you're someone who needs that type of support with your writing, you can go to that text again, hashtag elevate, and you can learn more about what we're doing and get that training and access to that as well. And then personal wise, they even talk about the personal stuff in terms of where they can find us.
Yeah, I mean, we individually have our own profiles on all the major platforms, Instagram, LinkedIn, et cetera. But we have a lot of folks that always like to ask us about, our journey to entrepreneurship, what we're doing, how we're doing, what we're learning about. And so last year we started a podcast or a YouTube channel called Goings on the Record. It's just me and Ramon, and each episode has a theme. I mean, we've talked about hustle culture, we've talked about what you want to offer, we've talked about how to
Pricing.
budget, we also had your pricing, we've also had our director of marketing, Carrie, come on to talk about all things marketing. And so we're always trying to come up with, based on what we're going through, what we're seeing, how to make something applicable so that we can use it as a tool to teach others so that they may learn from our journey. And so that's Goings on the Record on YouTube. And so we typically try to also, when we release the episode, post to our personal social media accounts as well.
Perfect. Perfect. Love that. All right. So I really appreciate both of you coming on the show today, and I really enjoyed talking to both of you. So thank you so much, and I just really appreciate you.
Thank
Thank
you
you for
for
having me. It was
allowing
great.
us. Yeah, thank you for allowing us, taking the time to interview us and ask us these questions. And I hope that the folks that follow you and are in your community may find this information to be helpful on their journey.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, well, y'all are dropping all kind of gyms, so of course these things.
Definitely.
Well, thank you both, and have a great rest of your day.
You too. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, my people, that brings us to the end of this episode of Bobs and the Burbs. To enjoy more interviews like this one, please subscribe on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or your podcast player of choice. You can also follow ALJ Digital Marketing on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Facebook for updates. I will add Renee and Dr. Ramon's social channels and links to the show notes, so be sure to take a moment to check that out. Thanks for joining me today, and until next time, remember, we out here too. Bye!